big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
Greetings.
Greetings.
Yes.
Greetings. Yeah. Hello. So I'm just going for a, you know, different kind of intro.
Yeah, your usual sort of glad handing that you do backstage.
Oh, no, that's different. You know, it depends where I am. If it's like with the crew, you know, my dudes.
Motley Crue. Motley Crue.
Of course,
yeah.
There's only one crew.
You see, you came out on the side of the dealer.
That's who I'm talking to.
Okay, yeah.
Talking about. Actually, it's different. No, when it's you know my bros, it's you know hello dude.
Your bro Doc McGee's here at the moment, isn't he? Because Kiss are here.
Oh,
yeah.
I did not know. Where are they playing?
I don't know. The they're at Birmingham, I think.
Oh. I'm deflated now.
He didn't get the invite.
I got fuck all.
He didn't get the invite.
I'm on the down low.
The doc.
I'm on the down low.
The doc, you're on the doc shit list, just like me.
I used to be in the doc house, but now I'm in the shit house.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever happened to that book I wrote for you, Doc?
That's what it should be called, From the Doc House to the Shit House.
That's my new memoir, in fact.
Yeah, it is.
You've revealed it.
Yes. Well, I mean, talking of new books.
Yes, indeed.
What have I been handed as I walk through the door today?
Oh, it looks like a very stunning looking
card. It's a new book called...
Did you see the quote on the back? Oh, sorry, do the front first.
Okay.
You might
have guessed who it's by now. The book's called Eagles, Dark Desert Highway.
Original.
How America's Dream Band Turned Into a Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good title.
Thank you.
By Mick Wall, of course.
And on the back.
On the back.
Yeah.
Clean off the
check that out.
Mark. This is a quote by Joel Selvin.
An esteemed rock author in America.
You cast around for him. Someone I've,
no.
Someone I've literally never heard of.
His new book on Altamont is a masterpiece.
Is it? Has that got a quote from Mick Wall on the back? Is it tit for tat? Quid pro quo?
No, see, John,
anyway,
that's not
Joel
how it works,
Selvin.
Yeah.
Joel Selvin, whoever he may be. Is he
esteemed
Joel
American
Selvin,
writer.
Is he a relation to John 5? Joel 7? Is he?
No, he's esteemed.
He's esteemed.
He was there in the 60s and 70s when rock journalism meant something, man.
Okay, so here we go. Mick Wall captures the conflicts and conflagrations that fueled the incredible rise and endless farewells of the Eagles. Hip, witty and wise, Wall spares nobody in a sordid, only in Hollywood tale that could have come from James Ellroy.
Yeah, baby!
That's a good quote.
Yeah, baby!
That's a good quote.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. It came from the American publishers.
Right, yeah.
And
but the book's got to live up to that now. Because all the Ellroy fans will buy it. And go,
but when they sent me the book, they had the quote, or not the book, the PDF with the thing. They had the quote, but they'd snipped off the end bit about James Ellroy. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Put the James Ellroy.
Bury the headline.
Put it on, man.
Yeah.
Could have come from James Ellroy.
My publishers have never heard of James Ellroy.
Yeah, that's sounds about
fucking
right.
Par for the course. So,
but the jacket, I have to say, it's also a very good jacket because it's like a colour of a sunset, I would say, burnished orange and ochre, but with a allusion to the cover of Hotel California.
Yes, yes. And also,
no members of the band or anything like that, no kind of bog-standard biography treatment. It's got a decent cover on it.
It's one of my favourites.
This is a proper book.
Now... I'm just as I'm talking to you, I'm looking at the levels, and your levels are very high.
Yeah, that's
and mine
right.
are very low.
That's right. Yeah, that's how it goes, man. You know.
Can I just say, though, that... Oh, my levels have gone up again. Must be my blood pressure.
It must be that you just weren't talking. That's the level of your...
Well, maybe I was being interrupted a bit too much, you see.
Sorry, was I praising your book? I'll stop now,
I don't know.
No,
please continue.
Yeah, no, I'll carry on.
Have you read any of it by any chance?
I have, actually.
A little bit.
I'm aware of the content. Bloody hell. Also by Mick Wall. Jeez, it's like Bukowski's thing.
Except I've taken a few of the shit ones out.
Have you? Let's
no
see.
Bono in there.
Oh, yeah.
No Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi, the book that was written in a weekend. I'm sure I had something to do with it. And Bono, the book that... There's a great story to that. I'm going to tell one day.
See, if I was you, I would have taken out I Talk Too Much, my autobiography with Francis Rossi.
Just it was a top three in the bestsellers.
I know,
list.
But it's just like...
Bit naff.
No, I just like... I like all the others. They're good. Yeah.
I should have put Doc McGee in there, shouldn't I?
You should put a unpublished section. That would be good, because then people would know where the real bodies are buried. Yeah.
Like my Joe Bonamassa book.
See? Who knew about that?
No one. Because he pussied out at the after I'd written the fucking
thing.
But
I mean, come on. That talking of snorathons, what's Joe Bonamassa ever done?
Well, seeing as the book's not coming out, fuck all!
Then I did this album, then I did that album.
My book,
then I did a gig.
My ghosted memoir for Kevin Shirley, that was a fucking laugh-a-thon.
Yeah.
But he, again, pussied out. Once he actually had it in front of him,
yeah,
he lost his nerve. Because he is a raconteur. So many funny stories. Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, Black Crowes, all that stuff. Journey. And his own life is extraordinary. But every now and again, he would tell a quick story, which didn't necessarily fit anywhere. And so we'd break up the chapters with toilet stories.
Right, right.
Like something you could read on the toilet in 2 minutes.
Oh, charming.
We had about 20 of those, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, but you see, your problem there is you've immediately put in people's head the image of Kevin Shirley sitting on the toilet.
Well, no, it's meant to be you sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, I know
reading
it's meant to be that, but that's the image you've given.
Well, perhaps if the book had ever come out.
Yeah, yeah.
He ended up trying to rewrite the intro. I know. Be like me going, oh, Kev, that album you produced for Iron Maiden, can I just get in there?
Yeah,
a
just
bit?
Turn the bass down.
You've got to turn the bass down. Yeah. Go get rid of at least one of those guitars.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, and Doc McGee, which is a fucking amazing
book.
Yeah,
well, it would be if Doc would tell the truth about Matthew Tripp for a start.
Dude, he tells the truth. And he got me to interview, you know, there was one guy who'd been to prison for like 20 years.
What, Doc?
No. But someone that was involved in the same thing that Doc didn't go to prison for and ended up with...
the community service or whatever it was.
Moscow Music Peace Festival. Yeah. And John Bon Jovi going around giving talks to school children about the horrors of drugs.
Yeah. While Doc was in his office. Doing his prison time.
He lives to serve.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to this. Yes. It's coming out in America in July.
Right, excellent.
They've changed the title to Life in the Fast Lane.
Oh, that's not as good as Dark Days of Highway.
You know what, though? I'm warming to it. I do like
Are
that.
You?
I think it's quite a Life in the Fast Lane. It is.
I don't like it when biographies just do the title of the band's best known song or whatever.
In this case, though, it is quite apt, isn't it? Because the whole book is, you know, like James Elroy.
Dark Desert
Highway. You know, like
Highway.
James Elroy, John.
Yeah. Dark Desert Highway is good, you know.
Yeah. No, they're both good, you know. Anyway, can I just say, my publishers here in the UK, Trapeze, who are part of Orion, who are part of Hachette, who I've been with for 19 years this year.
Yeah.
Have done another remarkably brilliant job on the promotion of the Eagles book.
I did see you got a review in the Telegraph.
Yeah.
That was a good review.
Thank you. Because I sent it to you.
Yeah. Well, I'd have seen it anyway.
Well, I emailed they've got a load of new people in there I've never met post-pandemic. And I emailed the new lady, the new boss, to say, did you see the Telegraph? you know, it's not saying it's a classic, but I tell you what, it's a pretty good review. The guy gets it, and there's lots of
because
space.
The thing is, the Telegraph are never going to say it's a classic. They're just not going to do that. That's not the way they review books.
It was a good. It was. I
and
thought
it was a really good
he
review.
Got, bloke had obviously read some of it, which is a change.
Yeah.
And she got back and went, "Oh no, I didn't know about that." So, okay, this is 3 days before the book is published, and I'm thinking, because I've had terrible, you know, my Jimi Hendrix book, not one fucking review, not even in a music magazine. Same with Meatloaf, same with Metallica, AC/DC, Black Sabbath. I mean, you know, my pulse is racing. And I used to get shit tons of press. And it's because they don't send, they're fucking useless. But at least they usually send it out, right? So I emailed Sean on Classic Rock and just went, "Oh, by the way, did you, you know, are you reviewing the Eagles book?" What Eagles book? Because I've checked with Ian Fortnum, the reviews editor. She goes, "We don't know anything about it." I said, "Okay, Sean." And I hooked her up with the woman at the publishers. And they sent over some books. And Sean emailed me privately and said, "Mick, the issue we're working on right now is the July-August issue. We should have had this weeks ago."
Yeah.
So I did a bit more checking. Guess what, John? You'll be astonished to learn they hadn't sent it to anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody.
At all.
At all.
Wow. Because usually, I mean, I don't know if people know or not, but generally what will happen is as you prepare for publication, the publisher will say to you, "Is there anybody specifically you would like it sent to?"
Yeah.
And you will always say, "People who've given you good reviews in the past, people who've given you good coverage in the past," because they might not be fully aware of that.
Yeah, I've had,
You know, they would usually ask you that, and they would usually follow through on that as a matter of course, and they would then send it to everybody else that they know as well. That's just the way it goes.
Exactly. And it doesn't really require much effort. You just email the author and he sends you back what you need. And that's happened with every book I've done with them in 19 years, but not this one.
Yeah.
So it goes on. So every book that I've had come out on Orion, and the first was in 2004, and I've actually sold at this point, believe it or not, almost a million books for them.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe that when he told me that. I mean, that's obviously over 19 years.
But it's still a lot of books.
There's some money there they made, you know.
Yeah.
Every book, they always... And this is when I thought, oh, I've really made it now. I've got an agent and a proper publisher as opposed to, you know, Omnibus and these people, Zomba. They always send a bottle of champagne on the day of publication and a card saying... "Happy publication day." Not this time.
Yeah.
Not this time.
Oh.
Not that I give a fuck. I mean, they'd
it's nice to have. It's
they'd
nice
send
to
these
have.
Bottles of champagne, and because no one in the family drinks champagne, I'm not going to sit on my own and drink it. So I'd sit in the fridge for years.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to a party, or, you know, there'd be a reason you might, "Oh, we've still got that bottle," you know. Nothing. So, you know, I've really raged about this in the past. I thought, I know there's no point. They already think I'm a troublemaker. No, they do. So
trouble with a capital T.
Trouble.
Yeah.
He expects us to promote this shit, you know. So I didn't rear up, but I did send her an email saying, "Listen, who's handling the press for this? Because I haven't heard from them." And I, you know, I could definitely, and I got this really disingenuous reply saying, it's like, I can't remember the exact words. It's too corny for me to even try and remember, but it was along the lines of, "I can assure you, you know, this has gone out everywhere and we have a dedicated PR person working on this. However, for now, all inquiries should go through me."
Yeah.
So I got Matthew, my agent, to do a, you know, the behind the scenes email, and she sent a reply, and he sent it to me, and it's like, fucking hell, it's just a pack of lies. pack of fucking lies.
See, people, you thought you were getting heavy metal, but today you're getting the truth about the publishing industry.
It breaks my fucking
heart.
This
is what they're like.
It breaks my fucking heart. The Stephen Wilson book.
Which is a great book.
Well.
Really good.
When I first met Matthew, my new agent, who introduced me to Andreas, my new publisher, they asked for they had three things on their wish list: a Dio book, Stephen Wilson, and Steve Perry.
Yeah,
couldn't get Steve Perry, but I got them Neil Sean, and they fucked it. I mean, not so much Andreas, but Matthew took so long.
Mm. Yeah, but
he's a huge fan. He wanted it to be perfect.
Yeah, but you might have dodged a bullet there, to be
well,
honest.
Well, in fairness, we definitely dodged a bullet because Neil is literally insane.
Yeah.
We'd still be working on that fucking thing now, you know.
Yeah.
But I got the Dio.
You'd be wearing the clothes that were bought for you by Jonathan Kane.
And I got the Stephen Wilson.
Yeah.
And they were so excited, particularly about the Stephen Wilson.
Yeah, because that's really good, yeah.
Not one fucking review except for Prog.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It is slightly, Wilson is that sort of character. You were either going to get all of the broadsheets doing it or none of them. It's a bit of a shame. Yeah.
But here's a guy whose records get in the Guardian.
Yeah, exactly.
Mojo,
that's what I mean. But it's
Telegraph,
like, but
Times.
Also, but probably not every record that he does. You know, it's like you have to get the right.
So you
moment.
Get the book.
Yeah. So you get the book, but again, it was a really clever book. I thought it was really well thought out, and you know.
That touches my heart, John.
The way that, yeah.
Because Stephen and I worked on that together.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Well, you were providing the publishing input and expertise.
Ideas, creative spark.
Yeah. Because there's already a million ways you can tell a story, aren't there? And it's like his isn't, you wouldn't necessarily want a chronological account of his childhood in Milton Keynes or whatever.
Well, that was our starting point. It won't be one of those.
Yeah.
But then we did manage to...
Yeah, you get a bit of that in, but it's not...
It's not boring.
Yeah.
So, it's not just Trapeze / Orion. It's also Little Brown / Constable. You can tell I'm very down about the whole thing.
Yeah, I can tell.
I just don't get it. Yeah, you read all... You know, these shit books that come out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Anyway, for me, it's the companion to the Jimi Hendrix book.
Yeah, in that it has got these kind of rip roaring novelistic sections where you hear about Henley, you know, going off and doing the mad stuff that he did.
And you get that whole troubadour scene in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Crosby,
well, you
Linda
can, well, you
Ronstadt,
get a good, what you get
Steve
a really,
Martin.
Yeah, what you get a really good view is that that's kind of like the Big Bang. That's the kind of where all the cosmic dust fuses together. And by pure chance, you sort of realise how these things happen, how bands come together. You know, it's literally in the right place at the right time. All these guys from lots of different places in America, only one of them actually from California, but were in the right place at the right time and somehow by this sort of fluke of circumstance come together.
Like an act of will.
Yeah, and end up being this, you know, this sort of era-defining band.
I got my inspiration for a lot of that from you.
Oh, that's
you
good.
Know, talking to you on the phone about the book.
Yeah, just talking it through how it might go. But that's because you want to know, you know, as a reader, that's what you want to know. You don't you don't get bogged down in all the details about the production, because you can read all that shit online these days. And it's not as if there aren't a million versions of Hotel California with extensive liner notes by whoever. You know, you can find all that crap out. What you want to know is the other stuff, the real, you know, the fact that Henley was driven into the darkness by this success, you know, really into the darkness, and Hotel California comes out of that, you know, and it's he is amazing in that he is the one, even more so I think than Glenn Frey, although this is arguable, who could turn that material into gold, you know, that.
Well, Glenn wanted to be a rock and roller,
yeah,
and Don had a little more, a little broader palette, But no, listen, you're right.
But he's conflicted because he also wants the rock and roll lifestyle and the cocaine and the girls and all of that. You know, he's doing that as much as any of them. But he is the one who can somehow turn that into art, you know.
And also, I am definitely not at the forefront of this. I think this is where good literature has been going for some years. But the idea that it should be all based on access and all the interviews.
Yeah, because Don Henley's never said anything.
You're not going to fucking tell me.
The book starts with a quote from another book where actual Don Henley is saying how much he hates books about the Eagles. You know, Don Henley hates books about the Eagles.
And actively goes out to destroy them.
This is the previous, so this is a writer of a previous Eagles book, Mark Elliott. Said,
good journalist, Mark.
Yeah. Early on, I sent letters to Don Henley and Irving Azoff, who's the Eagles manager, informing them that I was working on the book and asking for their cooperation in the form of a series of interviews. I emphasised that this was not a tell-all and that I believe my previous work spoke for itself and that I was giving them the opportunity to challenge or dispute any material that I may uncover in my research and provide properly documented corrective material. Their response was to tell me to go fuck myself.
Which is a better story than I met Don on a cloudy Tuesday. He treated me like shit and didn't say anything you didn't know already. Or the stuff he did say he lied about.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I became a published music writer in 1977. What the fuck's Don Henley going to tell me about, you know, anything?
Yeah,
I already know, mate. I know more about it than you do, because all he knows is the fucking Eagles and Linda Ronstadt and people with their head up his arse. He's never hung out with. You know.
That's the thing. And, you know, you do, again, in the book, you get the impression of how Henley curates his own image and his own legacy. And he's, you know, he's very strict about that. He wants to be perceived in a certain way. And I kind of think, actually, Don, you'd be better off just letting it roll, because that bit of mystique is always there. Because, you know, Hotel California is a masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, Boys of Summer is a masterpiece.
One Where of did these that come, nights. You know,
yeah, all these little things that he's done along the way. Mm. And when you get the stories of how they came about, you know, I mean... Boys of Summer is a great one, where he just gets this piece of music that someone else has written.
The guitarist from Tom Petty's band.
Yeah.
And Tom Petty had rejected it.
Yeah, he's a good one, Tom, yeah. And Henley's just on about how, like, he's just driving his car down to the beach and thinking about this tune. And you go, yeah, that's exactly what ends up in the song. You know, it's just this, but it's about kind of lost innocence and, you know, the fact that when you were young, driving along listening to music was amazing. But when you're older... It's much different. You know, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. You
when
know,
you're so, driving on that dark
desert highway. Yeah, yeah. Henley's a master at that. He really is.
He is. And I think, you know, like you with your cricket books, first and foremost, I want them to be a good book. I'm not worried what the ultimate Eagles fan thinks.
Yeah, you don't. It's not a genre book as such.
No, just for people that like books and appreciate literature and... Yeah. I see myself now as I always did, but I mean, I think properly now, more of a stylist, if you like.
Yeah.
So, like, Elroy, of course, is another universe beyond. But
yeah, I mean, he's disappeared into his own realm of.
But what you know, what he did with the Kennedys, you know, with American Tabloid and the Cold 6000, all that, you know, that is all presented as fiction. But I tell you what,
yeah, but it's
it
very
feels
much,
so
but it's,
truthful.
But it's very much based on fact, isn't it? It's like if he says Kennedy was in L.A. on such and such, he really was. It's not. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of speculating about what happened but behind the scenes, but... The truth is that Kennedy was there, and the same with the Eagles, but, you know, Henley was in such and such a place. The book sort of takes what's known about him and then extrapolates, well, this must have been what he was thinking.
And what it knows about the history of rock, history of LA, the
70s. But I mean, I think that's fair enough to do that. I think that is completely fair enough to do that. As long as you make it clear in the writing that that's what you're doing. Which is what you do, you know. So it's not like you're saying, Don Henley told me that this was what he's thinking. You get a kind of italicised section or whatever that presents, well, maybe this is how it happened, you know.
Well, thank you, John.
But in that way, you're driving at sort of, you know, more of the mystery of it, aren't you? Whereas, you know, other...
Well, hoping that you can evoke or invoke, you know, you can present a time and place... actually more accurately and more vividly than just going, I think you'll find it was a Tuesday, not a Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
But did you speak to Don? Don.
Those kind of, you know, I'm just thinking those established facts. You say like Jimmy Page, for example, you've written about in the same way, where you go, right, well, what do you know about Jimmy? Well, Jimmy Page bought Aleister Crowley's house.
Yeah.
Right. Why do you think he bought that? Because he thought it was a nice place. It's a nice little place to get away
to. Nice neighbours.
Yeah. No, he bought it because he's fucking into black magic. So what does that tell us about, you know? So it's like that's the kind of leaps you have to make, the imaginative leaps you have to make.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get beyond bog standard, as you say, it was a Tuesday and he wrote, you know,
some
Misty
publishers
Mountain
get it,
whatever.
But Trapeze don't. They still think it's 1985 and this book is going to be called Bloody Good Blokes, and it's just going to be all these lovely interviews I did with, I mean, they're all dead now apart from Don or Joe. Joe died 30 years ago. He's still walking around. That's the only thing. It's not, guys, it's not. We've moved on. We've got hundreds of channels, hundreds of internet, TikToks, everything. There is nothing that isn't known.
Yeah.
Other than what isn't known. Mm-hmm. And who can take you to that realm other than an adept, you know, someone who can truly, okay, you know about the Eagles. I know about the Eagles. Let's go back to the Troubadour in 1970 or 71 and let's have a look around the bar.
Yeah Who's there,
and what are they doing?
Yeah,
well, there's
and
one chapter
pretty much doing what
there was a title that you gave me, Asylum, their record label, Asylum and the Lunatics That Run It.
Did I give you that?
You did.
Oh, very
you
good.
Did you gave me a couple of really good ideas, actually.
Yeah,
more
you.
Than a couple.
Anyway,
so where are we going with this on the subject of you haven't done? I mean, not that I ever see your books because you don't give them to me, but
I didn't know you wanted them.
Oh, really? I've spent 20 years saying, "Can I have a copy of Muscle?" I still don't have that.
Oh yeah, well, I'll get you one of those. Yeah.
Oh, that's no good either.
I've got
now.
A few. No, it's good. It's good. I've got a few of those knocking about. I'm kind of think maybe that'll get another run because Arnie's back yet again.
Updated.
This is Muscle sort of mentions the birth of the Schwarzenegger myth, you know, which is all to do with his bodybuilding career.
But Muscle is one of John's masterpieces.
He is one of the best users of social media, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I thought you were going to say the best users of steroids.
Oh no, he's always been. He's never hidden.
Who's
that.
Not into steroids?
Because they weren't illegal when he took them, so he's got nothing to hide, you know. Right. But he is very, very good on social media. He does this sort of Arnie's boot camp thing, which is just like fitness tips and have you been to the gym today, you know, just do this. People love it. He's really good at it and he's funny. And he's just done this big Netflix thing.
Oh, yeah,
There's a show called FUBAR, which is some crazy adventure thing. But there's a big documentary series on him coming out on Netflix as well,
but
which is about his early years.
This is what we're talking about, okay, because... I remember when you told me you were going to do that book, and I had to... I mean, the fact that you said you were going to do it meant just validated it for me immediately. I realize it's like saying someone going, well, there's a great opera. Okay, I don't know anything about it, but if he says it's great, I guess it's great, you know. Muscle, you know, what's that then? And you kind of explained it to me, and then you showed me the proposal, and I flipped out. I just thought it was fantastic. Not because I'm into the world of the muscle bodybuilders, but because it was great writing.
Yeah. But it was kind of this, you know, this Schwarzenegger's got this amazing story for people that don't know. He comes from a little village in Austria. And Austria, weirdly, is one of these places where the genetics for bodybuilding are strong. You know?
Really?
So Schwarzenegger was born in a little village. And
big man from a little village.
Well, he wasn't, but his father was in the Nazi party in the war and had fought for the Nazis and was, by all accounts, not a nice person. He had a
Can I just remind? He was a member of the Nazi party, and he fought in the war for the Nazis. Yeah. Apparently, not a nice guy.
And was the town policeman. You know, that sort of guy. Schwarzenegger never got on with him, and he had a brother called Gerhard, who was,
of course he did,
like the golden child. Was Gerhard was going to be the one who Meinhard or Gerhard? Anyway, but
Wellard,
it was this moment where they sort of exchanged destinies, and Schwarzenegger became more and Meinhard or Gerhard, whatever his name
Wellhard.
Was. Wellhard. He sort of from his very high peak began to, as Arnold rose as a bodybuilder, his brother began to fall and end up dying in a car crash.
Really?
And Arnold actually raised his son. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
So Schwarzenegger, but then from this very sort of unpromising beginning and being a bodybuilder, which was not in the slightest bit popular at all, went to LA to try and make his fortune, and through becoming a champion bodybuilder, then was in Conan the Barbarian.
Which I reviewed for Kerrang! Magazine.
Yeah, exactly. And then
I actually went to see it with Xavier.
Yeah, well, there you go. And then becomes a huge movie star, and then becomes the governor of California. And actually, governor. At the time I was writing Muscle, he'd just become the governor of California.
Right.
And he turned up at the big bodybuilding show, which is the Mr. Olympia. He turned up just, it was in Las Vegas, just after he'd been elected. He came on stage to present the prizes. It was like this moment where, you know, everyone was validated. This is where this world can take you, you know. And it was amazing, you know. He's led an amazing life, really.
I read an interview with him many, many years ago, and it reminded me of something Slash told me when they first met him. Because, you know, Terminator 2 ends up having that You Could Be Mine was part of the soundtrack.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when they released You Could Be Mine as a single, it had clips from Terminator 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And Slash was saying they all went round his house, and he knew exactly, like Slash, Jack Daniels, Duff Vodka. Yeah. He just had it all there.
Yeah, smart guy.
Marie Kennedy.
Yeah, he was married to. I think they're divorced now.
Yeah, he was like, Marie. Yeah. Some more Jack Daniels for Slash. You know.
Yeah.
And she'd bring it in. And the thing that made me laugh, though, he said, he goes, it was really weird. He goes, the first thing he asked us, he goes, and he's looking at Axel, who's like skinny and all that. He goes, do you train?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Axel's like, well, and Sash is like, I lift a couple of weights. You know, go, good boy, you must train. It was like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of those guys who's got like massive charisma, you know. You just don't know where it
obviously
comes
smart.
From.
Obviously
smart. Yeah, but just the general thing, it's sort of the room changes when he walks in.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We're coming to the end on this one.
We're whiffling on,
but this actually leads to a thought. I'm just going to put out there.
Oh, he's just going to put it out there
because we have mentioned this, or I have. I've banged on about it for a few years, but we never really kind of have done much with it. But, you know, we talk about rock music, we talk about rock stars, we talk about rock culture, rock life, rock humour.
Yeah, rock humour, yeah.
And I think maybe in some coming pods, we need to also talk about rock stars that don't necessarily sing or play guitar.
Yeah, good
so,
point.
So, I mean, like in boxing, for instance, that's Muhammad Ali, and obviously some others we might mention. Football, that might be George Best or someone else, Rodney Marsh, or you know those classic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in writing, you know, Charles Bukowski.
Yeah, we should talk about Buck one day.
I mean, every rock star at a certain time had a Buck t-shirt. Yeah. Axl and all these guys, Kurt Cobain, William Burroughs, you know, very rock and roll. Did some very famous pieces with Bowie, with Jimmy Page, Jagger, Lou Reed. You know, there's an overlap.
There's a crossroads.
There is a crossroads.
Yeah. And we're going to we'll take you down to it.
We're going to take them down,
down to the crossroads. That's what we're going to do.
And on that bombshell.
Yeah. Don't forget to buy your copy of Dark Desert Highway. That's what I'm saying.
How the Eagles.
Really good, yeah.
Dark Desert Highway.
Yeah.
How was it?
How America's Dream Band turned into a nightmare.
That's right.
Very good.
Amazon. That's all I'm saying.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How do I stop this, Fern?